Hey everybody, this is Justin Michael Williams with a quick announcement before we start our episode. So many of you know that last year I signed a book deal to write the first ever meditation book written specifically for us. And this book is for the movement. This book is for the people, my people. And in the era of Me Too and the resistance and Black Lives Matter and a historic election, we have to ask ourselves, how the hell do we even keep our minds calm in the midst of all this craziness? How does something like meditation actually help us find our purpose? How does it help us get shit done? How does it help us step into the lives we know we were all born to live? And look, if you grew up in the struggle, facing things like homophobia or sexism or trauma or toxic masculinity or racism or social injustice or poverty or depression or shame, if you grew up facing any of that stuff, you need a different type of meditation. One that doesn't pretend that your struggle doesn't exist. So I'm gonna warn you, this ain't your mama's meditation book. This is Stay Woke, a meditation guide for the rest of us. And it is available for pre-order now. All you have to do, if you wanna join in on this movement, is go to staywokegiveback.com to pre-order the book, or you can just search for Justin Michael Williams, Stay Woke, at any of your favorite booksellers. I love you, I thank you, I honor you, and remember, we rise together. Hey everybody, this is Justin Michael Williams with Motivation for Black People, giving you trusted guidance to make your life better. And this is it. We are right here at Black History Month, and we're doing a very, very special, like, it's so special to me because this podcast actually started on Black History Month, and that's what gave birth to this entire podcast with now hundreds of episodes. And we're doing a special series this year called Forward, about how we move forward. And this is the thing. I think after the last election, so many of us were left asking, what do we do? You know, what the fuck do we do? And for me, this Black History Month, I wanted to make sure that I created a series that allows us to make history today, that allows us to take action. Yes, that looks back and honors the past, but so that we can move forward. And for many of us, I know how it is. Like, and to be honest, this was me. These last several years have been my first years even getting super involved in activism, getting out of the back seat, turning my ears deeply, deeply towards social justice, using our platforms, posting things, reading things in places that we used to ignore. And, you know, for other people, you've maybe been involved for a long time, but you want to take it deeper. You want to take more meaningful actions and you want to make an impact to make sure that you're focusing on what really matters. And there is one person, one singular person who has led the way for me most in understanding and learning how I could make the greatest impact on this planet. And not just about posting and reading and being lost in the shame of it all, but to actually do things that help make a change in our lives and in the lives of everyone we care about. And that person is Sean King. Sean King has led the way for me. He is one of the leading and most influential voices in this social political era. And the reason why I care so much about Sean's voice is because he uses his platform not just to shine a light on injustices, but to drive change. He motivates us to take action, and he supports some of the most significant political and social justice causes of our time. He really cares about the issues that matter to us most. And Sean is right here on the line with us today. So I just want to welcome you, brother. Thank you for being here.
Well, man, I'm so touched and so humbled. And, you know, I tell people every day, like, at my heart, I'm just a dude and I'm just scrambling and struggling and grasping, trying to figure out how we make change. And every day I'm just trying to squeeze as much change out of the day, as much impact out of the day. And man, I have made hundreds of mistakes. And from those mistakes, I've tried to learn hard, difficult lessons just on how to be effective, on how to make your life matter, how to make it mean something. And that, man, that journey is different for all of us.
Yeah.
But I hope to share some of those lessons today. And I love and respect you so much, and I'm glad to work with you and partner with you, and just excited to be on here with you, man.
Oh, thank you so much, brother, man. So, I mean, there's so many things that we can go into, but I really wanted for this episode to hone in on two of the topics that I think are the most important and most unique to this year that we have in front of us. And there was something that you said in one of your podcast episodes a long time. And for those of you guys who don't know, Sean has an amazing podcast called The Breakdown. And I'll never forget hearing you say this. You said something like, and this is not an exact quote, but it was something like, being good and having integrity aren't enough. We can be good and lose. We can have integrity and lose. It's going to take more than that. It's going to take us doing something, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I wanted to focus this episode on the things that we can actually do that I think are unique and most important to us this year. And for me, that was around your entire movement around the presidency and around flipping the Senate. And I know when I first heard about flipping the Senate and how this goes with the presidency, to be honest, I was like confused. I didn't really understand how it all worked. And so I want to take this episode to break down the story and why this is important. And I remember in episode 75 of your podcast, you know, you laid out this kind of two scenarios, like, okay, if a Democrat wins the election, but the Democrats lose the Senate, nothing will happen. And then you said, but also let's say the Democrats lose the presidency and Trump wins the presidency and the conservatives maintain control of the Senate, then we're still in bad shape. So can you explain to people the process of how the presidency and the Senate are linked together and why this matters so much?
Oh, yeah. And I don't say any of this, man, as an expert myself. Like, I follow politics and have worked on political campaigns now for several years. But what I see is that our school systems, even all the way through college, don't give the average American a really working understanding on how our political systems work, from the Senate, from the presidency, certainly from local politics and city councils.
Yeah.
Full time, I help run an organization called Real Justice, where we elect new district attorneys all over the country. And when we look back on President Obama's 8 years in office, I think we'll view them differently than how they might have felt for us culturally.
Yeah.
Like culturally, President Obama's 8 years were world changing. To have a black man and a black family who deeply personally cared about us, cared enough to represent us the best that he could, all of that was amazing. But what we'll find is he only had 2 years that he was president where he controlled the White House and Democrats controlled the House and the Senate. And those were the first 2 years of his presidency. In the final 6 years of his presidency, Republicans controlled either the House and the Senate or one of those three. And because of that, they blocked and they pledged to block every single piece of policy that he ever presented. And they didn't just block policy, man. He nominated, and I was actually really bothered. He nominated a man named Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court.
Supreme Court, I remember this.
And I didn't even like Merrick. Most progressives and liberals were pissed because Merrick Garland was not a progressive or a liberal. He was a moderate Democrat in some states. He'd be a Republican in California. Like, he was, like, just depending on what state you're in, Merrick Garland was very moderate. And his strategy there, Obama's strategy, was to say, okay, since Republicans have vowed to block who I pick, I won't pick someone like Sonia Sotomayor, who's deeply progressive, liberal. he picked somebody that Republicans should have been able to vote for
and embrace. Yeah.
And embrace. And he proved that they would do something that has never been done in the history of this country. He had a year left in his term, like not a fake year or a pretend year. He had a real year in his term. And for the entire year, they blocked his Supreme Court pick, in essence, stealing his choice, yeah. his power. It's unprecedented in all of American history. And what we learned there is that in the current system, the two most powerful branches are the presidency, then the Senate, and then I would say the House third. And Republicans today, with they control the White House and they control the Senate. And because they control just those two branches, they can control budgets. They can control all judges, all not just Supreme Court judges, but federal judges all over the country. And even though Democrats in 2018 swept House elections all over the country and now have almost a 50 vote margin in the House, they struggle to stop Trump, to stop his budgets, to stop his appointments. And so we're in a position to where if Democrats and progressives don't take control of the Senate, they won't be able to stop Trump. And here are the three scenarios that we're facing that could happen when we have elections. We have primaries from today all the way through the summer. There are primaries all over the country where you can vote in a Democratic or Republican primary. But then in November, when we have elections for the House, the Senate, the presidency, and other races, Trump will win or lose.
Right.
I actually think he has and I'm not an alarmist, a conspiracy theorist. I think Trump has a very good chance at winning.
Yeah. Somebody asked me that yesterday, actually. They said, do you think Trump is going to win? And I said, I think he's going to win more than I thought he would win last time. That's what I said, you know?
Well, I think what he proved in 2016, he won 30 states.
Yeah.
And what our listeners need to understand is that the race to the White House is not actually one election. It's 50 small elections. And if it was one election where whoever wins the popular vote wins, Hillary Clinton would have won that. Al Gore would have beat George Bush. Like, there are many examples where Democrats got the popular vote, but if that's not enough, you have to win the Electoral College. And so what that means is you have to win 50 elections all over the country. Trump won 30 of those.
Yeah.
And he's still going to be very competitive all over the country. So scenario one is Trump wins the White House and Republicans keep control of the Senate. Justin.
Yeah.
That's
a nightmare. That's the worst possible thing that could happen.
And it's not just for me and for you and for our listeners. It's not just an emotional nightmare. He will be able to appoint multiple additional Supreme Court nominees. He won't have anyone who could stop his most horrible policies from happening. There'll be no chance ever at impeaching him. I mean, like, if he wins again and Republicans maintain control of the Senate, we're in a very dangerous spot.
Yes.
And I think what we'll see is a version of Trump that is even more unleashed and unchecked than what we've seen these past few years, because he'll know not only is his final term, a lot of experts even wonder, would he leave at the end of a second term? And if he wins the White House and keeps control of the Senate, there's no way to check him. So yeah, that's scenario
that's
number
really
one.
That's really scary. And let me just name really quick, Sean, to like break it very simply for people. So if the president has policies and ideas and things that they want to push forward and budgets, like to get those things into the world and approved, it has to go to the Senate. And so if the Senate is on their side and is on the same party as Trump is and with these same ideals, then everything can just push forward without any block in that flow. But if the Democrats or people who are progressive win over the Senate, regardless of who's in presidency, we have some way to at least block what comes if it's things that are against, you know, positivity and hope in the agenda that we really care about for the people. Correct?
That's it. That's absolutely it. Cool. And so I think Trump is going to be difficult to defeat in the White House. I think the Senate is going to be difficult to flip. Both are very possible. But here's the second scenario.
Yeah, what's the second one?
Trump wins, but Democrats take back the Senate. And if Trump wins and Democrats take back the Senate, taking back the Senate will serve as an effective block to Trump. So number one is the disaster nightmare scenario. It's the one. Number one is the scenario we're in. And number one is this a continuation of that. Number two is Trump still wins, but Democrats take the Senate. They would be able to effectively impeach him if necessary. They would be able to deny his judge appointments. They'd be able to block his Supreme Court nominees. They would be able to stop his agenda, in essence, in the same way
that happened to Obama.
Yeah. The same way Republicans did to Obama for 6 years, Democrats could do to Trump for the 4 years he would be in office. What I hope is going to happen, and what I am tilting my life and energy to doing, is what I hope your listeners will do as well. And you don't have to be a political expert. You don't have to have a degree in political science. If you are a living, breathing person with the power to vote, the power to make phone calls, send text messages, I'll tell people some things they can do. The better scenario is that we defeat Trump in November and Democrats take back the Senate. And then the last scenario, and then I'll talk about scenario three. The last scenario is that we defeat Trump, but Republicans keep the Senate. And we've seen how that goes. We saw that for 6 years of Obama's administration. So I wear on my sleeve, Justin, and you and I've talked about this. I'm a huge supporter of Bernie Sanders, and I'll tell people why. But I want your listeners, because you may have many listeners who are either undecided or are leaning towards somebody else. And let me say what I say on my podcast and what I say all over the country. First and foremost, please make a choice. Make a choice, be proud of it, volunteer for that campaign, and go all in. But don't allow the media, don't allow other people to choose your nominee for you. Choose somebody that you believe is honest, who has integrity, who has an agenda that you think represents people of all walks of life. And hopefully choose somebody that you believe can really defeat Donald Trump.
I'm going to be really honest with you. Like last year, I remember very specifically last year, you posted something on Instagram and you said, this year for the presidency, I'm going to be campaigning hard. I'm going to be campaigning early. I'm going to be endorsing someone early. I'm going to research every candidate. I'm going to do everything. And I commented on that post and I said, and this was before we met, and I said, whoever you pick, I'm voting for, right? I just said, that's what I said. So whoever pick, I'm voting for. But then what was interesting is then you announced that it was Bernie. And I was like, oh, like I was like, because I actually did not vote for Bernie in the last, you know, election. And and I had so many of the same thoughts that I know a lot of listeners and a lot of people in the community may be having, like the things that I keep hearing are, well, is he too divisive? Like, is he too strong? Somebody yesterday, literally, that's one of the listeners said to me, he's just like Trump, but on the opposite side of the spectrum. And that's not what we need right now. We need somebody who's whatever. And, you know, is he too old and can he win? And I just wonder if you can take a moment to speak to some of these things, because it wasn't until I really opened my ears and my heart and heard from you directly at that event that I really understood how much integrity and how much power this man and this movement actually has, and actually even how much more of a chance he has at winning than the media is presenting to us that he does, you know, they're trying to mute him. So I just love for you to first speak a little bit to maybe some of the main things I hear is he too divisive? Is he too old? That's the one I hear more than anything. Sure. And yeah, start there.
Yeah, well, man, first, it's important to ask these questions. And anybody or any candidate or any campaign that's afraid to take questions or is afraid of kind of the hard conversations, that's a red flag to me.
Yeah.
And I love to talk about all of these things. First, I want to tell your listeners, I think I'm a good judge of character, and I've actually come to know Bernie Sanders personally. And there is kind of a caricature of Bernie, like a meme of Bernie, that makes him out to be a mean old man.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, and let me also be clear, I'm not paid by the campaign. I'm no different than you or anybody. I am literally a volunteer. Like, I am a volunteer for the campaign, and I've never one day in my life ever been paid by the campaign. He is a sweet, nice, compassionate man. My family, my wife, my kids, our friends who've come to know him, like, we love him, not just because we don't worship him. I mean, like, we have critiques, but he is a warm, compassionate soul. But the media has done him a horrible disservice.
Yeah.
He is nothing like Trump, he is the polar opposite of Trump, who is dishonest, who lacks integrity. Like, he's the opposite of Trump in that Trump's dishonest, Bernie's honest. Trump has no character, Bernie has lived a life of integrity. Their policies are different. The way they view the world is different. I don't see Bernie as divisive at all. In fact, Bernie was the first non-Republican to win his seat in the House in over 100 years in Vermont. He was the first person, the first non-Republican to win his Senate seat. He has the highest approval rating now for almost 10 years in a row of any senator in the country. That's all 100 senators. He has the highest approval rating out of all 100. And so when people say he's divisive, he literally has the highest approval rating of any person in the Senate. Even now, even while he's running the campaign, he's beloved in Vermont. But Bernie also has the highest honesty ratings of any person running for president. When you ask people, which candidate do you view to be the most honest? He wins time over time over time.
Yeah.
When you ask voters, who do you trust the most? He wins that poll. When you ask voters, who do you trust cares about your health care the most? He wins that one. Like, these are issues that everyday people, when we say don't be divisive, people often, I don't push back on the question, but I ask people, well, when you say divisive, what do you mean? Because Bernie literally is fighting for things that will impact people from all walks of life. And, you know, regarding Bernie's age, part of what I love about Bernie being older is two things. One, you see his actual record. And I encourage people, go with somebody who's actually been fighting for the things they now say they care about.
Yes.
The things that Bernie says he cares about today, he's going to care about these things whether he's running for president or not.
Right.
He's always cared about these things. And so you see his record, but he's got a tremendous political IQ. He's got an amazing amount of experience. People don't know, two different years, Bernie was mayor of Burlington, Vermont. He's been an executive. It's the largest city in Vermont. It's a small state, but it's an important city. Two different times he was listed as one of the greatest mayors in the country. It's a country with 20,000 cities. Two different times he was listed as one of the 50 greatest mayors in America. Like, he was beloved as mayor. He got great things done as mayor of Burlington. And so, like, he is spry. He's fit. Like,
well, you know what's really interesting to me about this, Sean? Like, Bernie, it's always fascinating because it's the number one thing I hear people bring up. Well, he's old. And then Joe Biden, so Bernie Sanders is 78, Joe Biden is 77. It's like, it's not even, you know, like, and people, so it's interesting.
Let me tell you who else is 77, Nancy Pelosi.
Yes.
And notice that you don't hear anybody saying Nancy Pelosi is too old.
No.
Like, you know, it's just her age. And Nancy Pelosi will be in the House. She could be in the House for another 15 years. Like, Bernie is sharp. He has a motor. Like, if I thought that Bernie could not be a full capacity president, I wouldn't support him. And so I get people's concern, but I still, you know, it's not a concern for me.
Yeah.
And, but it's okay to have that concern. I just happen to think there are several younger candidates running, and I just don't, one, I don't think they would defeat Trump, but I don't think they have the experience. I don't think they resonate with voters. The irony of Bernie being the oldest candidate running is that he is beloved by young people.
Yeah.
And no candidate in modern presidential history has resonated with young voters the way Bernie does. President Obama did, but other young voters had other candidates they liked. Young voters are basically just choosing Bernie.
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, you know, the only other person that I hear people talking about, if you don't mind me asking this question, Sean, is, like, when I'm talking to our listeners and I'm in conversations with them, the other person that people keep mentioning to me, and they're like, well, Elizabeth Warren, Elizabeth Warren. Do you have anything to say just about Elizabeth Warren in comparison to Bernie Sanders, or, you know, why, just anything that you might want to shed light on about that?
Yeah, I have a lot to say about Elizabeth Warren. You know, Bernie loves Elizabeth Warren. He actually asked her to run for president in 2016 and told her explicitly, and this is so that people know this isn't urban legend. Bernie wrote a book in 2018 called Our Revolution. This is in his book. He asked Elizabeth Warren to run for president because, one, he believed she could defeat Hillary Clinton, and he believed that she had policies that were progressive. And he told her that he wouldn't run if she ran. And he only decided to run when she didn't decide to run. And so, first, I think that answers there. When people said that Bernie doesn't believe a woman can win, he literally asked her to run in 2016. And I have talked with Bernie and his entire campaign. He would never say that, not only to Elizabeth Warren. He doesn't believe it. And he campaigned at almost 50 events for Hillary Clinton. And so he fought even for her to win. But I love many of Elizabeth Warren's policies. She's sharp. Like, she would be my second choice. And so I understand if people look at her and relate to her position or policies, and that's just fine. And what I tell people is a couple of things. I think Bernie is the best organizer of people. And we believe that to actually get things done, if he's elected, it's going to take that type of person who isn't just thinking, what do I do when I get in the White House, but how can we make this a movement even when we're in the White House? Now, they do diverge on many policies, particularly I'm a big advocate for the human rights of people in Palestine, and really no other person running for president has spoken up for the freedom and dignity and human rights of people in Palestine, including Elizabeth Warren has not. And Bernie has been consistent speaking against human rights abuses there. Bernie's financial policies are very different than Elizabeth Warren's. They see capitalism very differently. Elizabeth Warren. Yeah. This is not a knock on Elizabeth Warren, but she was a Republican until she was 45. Mm-hmm. And for the first 45 years of her life, she was a gung-ho capitalist. Like, that was like the core philosophy of being a Republican, is being a kind of unfettered capitalist. Well, to this day, she continues to say that she is a gung-ho capitalist. Like, she has said that she is all in on capitalism. Bernie believes, and I believe, and most of Bernie's supporters believe, that the actual system of capitalism itself breeds inequity. Yeah. That it's not just, oh, the wrong people are using this system. No, we believe this system will always be deeply unequal. And so the way they view economics, finance, very, very different. And I love many of her policies. I have 10 different buddies that work on her campaign. and I love and respect them. So, you know, here's my pitch. I would prefer everybody to support one of the two of them.
Right.
They are the two progressive people running. I think there are important differences on the way they see the world, the way they see policy in a lot of ways. But just make a decision.
Yeah.
If you think you may support her, go for it. But don't just wait. Volunteer in your city. Volunteer in your state. If you want to be a part of the Bernie Sanders campaign, there's so many ways to do it. And you can go to BernieSanders.com/volunteer. I would just encourage people to give it a shot. Don't just be a fly on the wall. Try to see the campaign from the inside out and get involved in that way.
Yeah.
And I had a conversation with Bernie Sanders, and I volunteered for his campaign in 2016, and I was a surrogate for his campaign in 2016, and we did commercials and events and all of that, and I was heartbroken when he lost the Democratic nomination. I still believe that he could have defeated Donald Trump, but he didn't get a chance, and so that's a moot point. I met with him in 2017, 2018, and even in 2019 before he chose. And the biggest reason of all, Bernie has 100 reasons he decided to run. The biggest reason he decided to run is that he honestly, earnestly believes that he can defeat Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Bernie believes he can defeat Donald Trump in what we call red states, where they're not, these states, and many of our, of your listeners live in the, I lived in Georgia for almost 20 years. It's called a red state. But Georgia has millions of people who want something better than Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
So it's not just Texas is one of those states. It's called a red state, but almost 50 million people voted for Beto for Senate. You know, it's like you can win in these states. And Bernie is defeating Trump in so-called red states all over the country. For instance, Bernie Sanders, even when he went against Hillary Clinton, Bernie won every single county in West Virginia. And normally in the presidential campaign, Democrats don't even try in West Virginia. They don't even go. Well, Bernie will try. Bernie won 71 of 72 counties in Wisconsin. And Hillary lost in Wisconsin. And she never campaigned there, and just gave the state up. She lost in Michigan. Bernie won in Michigan, and we think Bernie is going to take the fight to Trump in all 50 states. And deeper than that, poll after poll after poll for most of Bernie's career have shown that he is, year after year, the most trusted elected official in America. People believe he's honest.
Yeah, and that's because he is. He's been that person. And remember, Sean, I remember just right now as you're talking, I'm remembering something that you said at one of the events that I came to when you were in LA. And you had said, you know, you were reflecting on, you know, who you would have been in the civil rights movement, you know, if you were back then in the 60s. And that oftentimes we ask ourselves that, like, who would I have been? Would I have been a Black Panther? Would I have been marching with MLK? Would I have been doing whatever? And you said the biggest indicator of who you would have been then is who you are right now. And who Bernie Sanders was then, I think some people don't even know. Can you describe a little bit about who he was then?
Well, part of what I love so much about Bernie, and let me say to your listeners, and I would say this in front of Bernie, like, this is not a secret conversation that we're having now. I have criticisms of Bernie, and he's not impervious to that. I don't rate Bernie an A+ on every single policy. And there's no politician that you will ever agree with 100% of the time. And if you do, it probably means they're lying to you.
Right.
So Bernie, the first thing that I love about Bernie is that what you see is actually what you get. Bernie tells the truth when it's inconvenient, when it could harm him politically. He is honest, even at personal cost to himself. And, you know, Bernie grew up, I'm in Brooklyn right now, and Bernie grew up in Brooklyn, and both of his parents moved to the United States from Europe, and his mother's family moved here from Europe, and his father actually immigrated to the United States from Europe, fleeing what became the Holocaust. And entire bloodlines of Bernie's family were killed in the Holocaust. And he never talked about it, but in the Jewish community that he grew up in here in Brooklyn, Bernie felt the impact of it, not just in his family, but literally all over his community. There were men and women that literally had the tattoos on their hands and arms, having survived the Holocaust. And it had a deep impact on the way he saw the world, the way he thought about injustice. And Bernie decided to go to college here in Brooklyn. And after his freshman year in college, his mother passed away. And it was personally devastating for Bernie. She was the anchor and the rock of his family. And Bernie's family was poor. They struggled from week to week to get by. And after his mother passed, Bernie loved his father, had a great relationship with his father, but he felt like it gave him permission to leave Brooklyn. And Bernie moved to Chicago to go to the University of Chicago. And sadly, the year after Bernie moved to go to University of Chicago, his dad passed away. And we see that all over the country. Normally, when a wife or spouse passes away, you regularly see men don't make it much longer, you know.
Right.
And
right.
And something happened, Justin, where it flipped a switch for Bernie, and he threw his entire life into the growing civil rights movement in Chicago. And what I say is what you said, that who you are in the most difficult times in the world, it matters. And here Bernie is. The phrase white privilege didn't exist in the 60s. But Bernie understood, even though he was a Jewish man and Jewish people experienced persecution, he understood that as a man and that as a white man in Chicago, he had privilege. And he decided to use that privilege in the most powerful ways. He was the president of the Congress of Racial Equality, CORE, the university chapter there in Chicago. And they took over the president's office for days, not because of something that impacted Bernie directly, but because the University of Chicago was forcing black students not only to stay in segregated housing, but to stay in substandard housing. And they were paying the same tuition, room, and board. And they took that over until the policy changed, and the University of Chicago changed that policy. And it gave Bernie, it was a light bulb moment for Bernie where he realized, oh my God, if we organize and are focused, we can change the world. And he threw himself into, he protested police brutality in Chicago. He blanketed the city of Chicago with flyers about police brutality. He was so bothered by income and educational inequality, in great part because he thought those were the issues that Dr. King cared about. We forget that the March on Washington in 1963 was called the March on Washington for Freedom and Jobs. We cut the Freedom and Jobs part off.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, that's literally, if you look at any flyer or banner or poster, it's called the March on Washington for Freedom and Jobs.
Mm.
And so Bernie and two black women chained themselves, two young black women chained themselves to each other to stop a bulldozer that was about to bulldoze a lot and put what they called, it was a type of trailer. And I forget the name of this trailer. It was named after the Chicago school superintendent. And black children all over Chicago were forced to go to school in trailers while there were thousands of empty classrooms for white students.
Wow.
And Bernie and these two young black women, and these are the posters and pictures and images you see of Bernie being arrested, chained themselves and literally sat in front of the bulldozer so that they could not bulldoze that lot and put that trailer there to force black students into those substandard trailers. And I love it because even when Bernie was arrested, he just let his body go limp and
they made
decided
him carry
that,
him off, right?
Yeah, he made them carry him. And I love that image because it showed that even then he was fighting back against injustice and was just doing everything he could to show people, like, here is how you use your privilege. He was organizing workers. He literally was organizing workers at the local meatpacking facility while he was a student at the University of Chicago. And so, like, this is 1961, 62, 63. And in every year since, he has tried to figure out powerful ways to use his influence, to use his skills and background to organize people. And that's what his campaign is about. It's not about him. And when we say that, we mean it. It's about how do we organize? And, you know, his campaign is probably the most organized project or effort or campaign that I've ever been a part of. It's a grassroots campaign. He's hired women and people of color and people, indigenous people, local people, to run the campaign from the top down, including hiring literally the first Muslim American to ever run a campaign is running Bernie's campaign. My dear friend, Faz Shakir, a Muslim American, has never run a presidential campaign. And so from the top down, he is showing, like, I'm doing this differently.
And he's been doing it this way for such a long time. Like, this is not him just turning on hot button topics just because they're the things that he thinks people wants to hear. These are things that he's been standing for, you know, forever. And, go ahead.
I was going to say, and so he is all over the country, not just encouraging us to vote him into office. Bernie is not a friend of, like, he is not dying to be in the White House. Like, he just wants change.
Yeah.
And he knows he has a great chance to defeat Trump. In almost 40 straight polls, Bernie defeats Trump all over the country. And he knows that he understands it'll take us organizing with him to make change. And so it's not just going to happen. Like, it's going to be hard to elect Bernie. It's going to be hard to defeat Trump, and it's going to be incredibly difficult, man, to flip the Senate. Right now, there is, depending on who you count as Democrats, there is a 4-6 seat majority for Republicans. So there are 10 races that are up for grabs all over the country where Democrats could win.
Yeah.
But here's what scares the hell out of me. Nobody's even talking about them.
Right.
So there's a Democrat running in North Carolina and she could win, but nobody's talking about it. There's a Democrat that is running in Iowa, but nobody's talking about it. And so we have to say, like, how do we support these candidates? I have a dear friend who just hours ago, his name is Raphael Warnock, who just announced that he's running for Senate in Georgia. And he can win, but it's going to take all hands on deck for that to happen. And
I love that you have the website for that. You know, like, so for people who want to know and they want to look at who's running near them and who's being supported, you know, by Sean and the campaign, and you can just go to howweflipthesenate.com and see everything there, howweflipthesenate.com, and it gives you very clear action steps, talks about the different candidates, talks about why this is important, talks about who may be in your area that you can look at. And, you know, I think in closing, one of the things I want to ask you here is, you know, one of the things that happens on this podcast with primarily, you know, a Black audience, so many of us are left often feeling like either way, is anything going to change? You know, I'm still watching all this shit on TV. I'm still watching my brothers and sisters get shot. I'm still watching, you know, I'm still watching all of this stuff. And can this actually change? Does it matter? Can I make an impact? And I just would like for you to paint the picture and ground it a little bit in how all of this, the Senate and us voting for presidency and getting involved, really does and can impact our lives.
Oh, listen, I understand all of us have a right to feel that way. And I have been over the years in a position where I asked myself, like, is all of this going to actually matter? Well, several things. I think the election of Donald Trump shows us the power of the presidency.
Yeah.
Even though President Obama wasn't able to get a lot of positive stuff done because they blocked it, he also wasn't doing most of the negative stuff that we see Trump doing.
Yeah.
So winning the White House matters, even if it's just so that you can make sure
harm
many
isn't
of the
being
horrible
done.
Things. Yeah, that the harm is not done. So the White House matters. But let me tell you the race that really teaches me this all the time. I've helped run almost 30 campaigns for district attorney all over the country, and we've won half of those. And the last one that we won in November in San Francisco. And Bernie Sanders was the only presidential candidate to endorse my friend Chesa Boudin, who was running for DA of San Francisco. And Chesa won that race. And already Chesa is changing the policies and the practices of the local DA's office. And it's impacting people right away. And what I see is, politics and these positions, they can have a deep practical impact. Like, if we don't flip the Senate, if we don't win the presidency, if we don't win local races from school board to district attorney and others, somebody's going to win. And somebody is going to use that power and that influence to do good or do harm. And so I encourage everybody, be an educated voter. Like, I don't like for people to just vote Democrat. Know who's running. Like, if you vote in the primary, well, what if there are 10 Democrats running for a position? Who's who? Like, be an educated voter. Decide that you're going to understand and know who represents you from your state representative and every other position. And you'll feel the power of the vote. And here's what I have to remind myself. People literally gave their lives for us to have this, for us to be able to elect the people we want to elect. And it's not cliche, like, we owe it to them.
Yeah.
To be educated, smart, informed voters and volunteers. And, I have hope, Justin. You know, like, I believe we can win all of these races. I think it's going to depend on the quality of our organization. It's going to depend on us eventually getting over the petty beefs and disagreements that separate us, but we have a lot of work to do, man.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to be doing it with you, and keep encouraging your listeners and your audience, and we'll keep on pushing.
And I think one of the things that's so impactful to me to think about is, so many of us, we've been stuck in a system that hasn't worked for us for most of our lives and most of our parents' lives and for generations. And so it's hard for us to even imagine really living in a society, in a world that really does work for us, that really does have our best interests in mind and really can help see us prosper versus, hearing the same shit over and over that never changes. And I think that when I heard you speak about Bernie at this event, and when I heard you talk about how deeply he cares for our community and how much can actually be done, I saw that hope and that spark, not just hope, but I saw the reality in front of me. And so I will be voting for Bernie Sanders and am doing everything that I can to do that. And I encourage everybody else to, again, pick who it is that you want and go all in. And, Sean, I just want to thank you for taking the time out of your day and your schedule to be with us. I said back early days, I remember when I first learned about you a few years ago, and I posted, I said, Sean King is the most important person you could possibly follow online. And I stand by that. You are an amazing man,
well,
an amazing
you, man.
Father, you're a brother. And I just want to thank you for being on this podcast with all of us today.
Well, thank you, man. Take care.
Yeah, take care. And for those of you listening, people are going to be looking back at us years from now, and this will be a moment in history where people look back and say, this is where a change happened. Those people who were alive in that time really made a difference for the world in the future. And I hope that this podcast and the series that we're doing this year for Black History Month help you learn how we can all move forward. I love you. I thank you. I honor you. We will have tons of links in the description of this for you to follow Sean and the different work that's happening in the world about the different candidates, campaigns, and important issues of our time. And this has been Justin Michael Williams. I will talk to you on the next podcast. Bye for now.